this week, we ask the question, why should you not push somebody into that officer's chair? Or maybe you should, if you're looking to burn them out quick. Then we'll hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison as he tells us about the bicentennial of the Grand Lodge of Missouri. You'll never believe where that first building was located. Next up, joining the Masons ruins a marriage. Hear what Ann Landers had to say back in 1981 on that topic. Maybe it wasn't so much Freemasonry that ended that marriage. We'll wrap it all up with a first-hand account of the dedication of a building at the International Peace Garden and how the Freemasons were intimately involved. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 495. Right off the bat, I want to say thank you to our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners. Without them, we cannot do this program. If you want to learn more about how we produce this program, go on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check it all out. In the news, what's going on? Well, I'm about to wrap up a new edition of a new book that might interest you. That's right, the 14 chapters of Max Heindel's Ancient and Modern Initiation. I'm reprinting, which will be available soon, and we've included a biography as well as a epilogue to the text. Max Heindel was a pretty interesting person, if you know anything about his history. I did dive extensively into his history in order to put together the biography as well as the epilogue for the book. I will say that he is not a man without controversy, and you will know all about that by checking that out in the biography. But that'll be out in a short period. Probably expect it before the end of next month, maybe sooner. So there's that. Other things in the news. Well, most of the lodges in the United States are tiptoeing back into actual meetings inside the buildings, which is exciting for everybody. I hope you all are proceeding with caution. And if you're already just going crazy meeting in the actual buildings in person, I'm hoping that you guys are having an amazing time and remembering what it was like before this all started a year ago. What else is happening? Well, June is upon us. That means EsoterraCon is coming. Very excited about that. I am not presenting this year. This year they've got an incredible lineup of people. In fact, on the day I'm recording this, they're opening up sales to have a special session with Jamie Paul Lamb, which will be pretty cool. So I hope you've got your tickets for EsoterraCon. It is a virtual event this year. Next year, I believe, is going to be back in person. We'll see. The only reason I think it wouldn't be is the logistics, you know. Maybe if the planners feel that this is more conducive to the educational experience, then they'll stick, obviously, with what goes best. Not a Masonic program at all, but dealing with some of the same concepts that Masonry deals with about being true to yourself and being reflective. There's a YouTube channel that was recently started not long ago, and it's called Being Humankind. It is run by some people who are near and dear to me, Brother Brian Simmons, Brother Mike Jarzebeck, and also Neely, who is also connected in that her partner is with a Masonic Lodge out there at Ezekiel Bates in Massachusetts. I'll put a link to them in the show notes for you to check them out. I was a guest on their program, both a person who was getting interviewed as well as somebody who has interviewed somebody else. And that was a pretty cool thing. But really the program is about connecting people and really having honest conversations and being present. So it's a really cool project, and I hope you guys check it out. Well, the first one I've got for you this week is something, you know, I don't intend to read from the Midnight Freemasons often, but I did want to read this piece because I thought how apropos it was, considering many of the lodges have essentially been stagnant in that they've kept the same officer line for 2 years because of the pandemic. Some haven't. But nonetheless, it is always a struggle, it seems, to fill the officer chairs, whether they're elected positions or appointed positions, and are there stipulations about how one can get into the elected line or the appointed line, whatever those things may be. So just last week, Worshipful Brother Darren A. Laners published a piece called The Masonic Meat Grinder, and I'd love to read that for you now. I recently got into a discussion with my secretary about pushing a younger member into the progressive officer line. He felt that we needed to push this member, who is currently serving as our chaplain, into the officer line and encourage him to sit in the junior deacon's chair. I argued against it. Unfortunately, Brother Secretary's belief seems to be a pervasive one that I have encountered not only in Blue Lodge but in appendant bodies as well. We need to stop forcing choices upon our members, especially when it comes to becoming an officer. I call this sending them to the Masonic meat grinder. I use this term because in forcing someone that has no desire to become an officer, we are essentially giving them the same choice that cattle have when lined up to go into the abattoir. While we are not killing that member, essentially, if they are not willing to serve as an officer, in forcing that upon them, you will most likely never see that member again, and you will be lucky if that member continues to pay dues. While I believe that one of the many lessons that Freemasonry can teach you is leadership, not everyone is cut out to be a leader, nor wants to be one. I understand that if you're an average lodge, maybe you're struggling to make a quorum, and therefore you feel that everyone needs to be in a chair. In Illinois, a quorum is made up of 7 members who are, as our ritual explains, the quote-unquote worshipful master, senior and junior wardens, treasurer, secretary, senior and junior deacons. In my mind, those are the only chairs that need to be filled to conduct a stated business meeting. Everything else is superfluous. It's always puzzled me why we get a new member into the lodge and automatically assume he needs to go into the progressive officer line and put him in the junior warden's chair. I believe that being a junior deacon is a lot of responsibility for someone new to the craft. I feel that that chair requires not only ritual memorization but learning a lot of floor work and rod work, which can be a bit overwhelming for a new brother. Then, after a brief explanation of what he needs to do, when I say brief, in my experience, it's lucky if the new brother gets more than 2 or 3 minutes of quote-unquote on-the-job training. Then, inevitably, another brother, or maybe the same one, usually an older past master but not always, takes it upon himself to explain to this new brother everything he did wrong during the meeting. If that brother shows up to another meeting, it's a miracle. I was a rare exception to that rule. Even though it angered me on so many levels, I decided early on that I wasn't going to let the grumpy past masters get the best of me. While many will argue that having a progressive line is detrimental to Freemasonry, as it allows men to serve as worshipful masters that have no business in the chair, I point out that, at least in my jurisdiction, the 3 main officers, as well as a treasurer and secretary, are elected positions. Unfortunately, in our failure to properly guard the West Gate, we are also failing to guard the East. We need to stop promoting members into positions that they are ill-suited for. The unpopular opinion that I'm going to throw out here is that if you feel that the current officer is not ready to take on the responsibilities of his next position, that you either have a discussion with this brother to see how he feels about staying in the current chair another year, or if that conversation is going to be impossible, that you find an alternative candidate and suggest that person for the office they will be moving into instead. In doing so, you are forcing every member to the ballot box, and there may be other members that feel the same way as you do. Yes, it's probably going to cause disharmony in your lodge, but ultimately it might be saving your lodge from a potential disaster. Nothing can damage a lodge faster than an elected officer that has no business being in that position, especially if that position is a worshipful master, treasurer, or secretary. Let's stop promoting officers by nature progression and start electing them by their merits. As much as I hate having to recycle officers, I feel that it's better than repairing the damage that can be caused by having the wrong man in the position of leadership. I think that such disharmony can be avoided by mentoring the officers behind you in the line. Case in point, at St. Joseph No. 970 in 2019, we had our senior warden leave due to health problems. This would have put our junior warden into the senior warden's chair and into the master's chair a few months after that. He was not ready for that responsibility. I was serving as junior deacon at the time, and the secretary made an observation to the current master that he felt the junior warden wasn't ready to move up and become master in such a short time. They had an honest discussion. and the junior warden agreed he wasn't ready to be master and would want to serve as senior warden for at least 1 year prior to becoming master. I was approached to sit in the senior warden's chair for the remainder of the 2019 Masonic year. Our year is from June to June at St. Joseph 970, which would make worshipful master again in June of 2020. Due to the pandemic, I made Lodge history by becoming the only worshipful master of St. Joseph Lodge to be installed virtually. Let's hope that I continue to hold that distinction. Of course, this only works if officers behind you are willing to be mentored or need mentoring. One of the main things I have been doing as master is making sure that my senior warden is prepared for the East. It will be his time serving as worshipful master. I have been mentoring him this past year. The culmination of this preparedness was realized at our last stated meeting where we had agreed that my senior warden would run the meeting. I sat in the West and he sat in the East. I prepared the meeting agenda for him, but he did the opening, ran the meeting, and handled the closing. He did a fantastic job. In allowing him to do this, I allowed him to have the confidence going into his year as master, because I gave him the opportunity to experience that position prior to being officially placed in it. It is something that I wish would have happened to me when I was senior warden in 2016. Prior to going into the East in June of 2017, returning to my original argument, not every member wants to be in the progressive line. It's our duty as those that are in that line to not force them into the line before they're ready. I would much rather have that member continue to show up at the stated meeting than to have him made to feel uncomfortable or even embarrassed by pressuring him into a chair that he has no desire to occupy for one meeting and see him never return. While I understand that for a lodge on the verge of closing, this is a difficult thing to do, and in some cases it might be an impossibility, but if you're in such dire straits, you should be having a conversation regarding merging with another lodge. A lodge should have enough members showing up to make quorum at their meetings that want to be in the progressive officer line to support those that do not. While we also need to make sure that we are giving members reasons to show up for stated meetings by adding Masonic education and or activities or opportunities for fellowship in the form of lodge dinners or festive boards, we need to make sure we are not forcing them to stay away by forcing an officer position upon them that they have no desire to hold. Darren A. Laners. You know, Darren is a co-managing editor of the Midnight Freemasons blog, and he's really kind of saved the blog because I got busy with school, and Midnight Freemasons really wouldn't have the content it has today without Brother Darren. So, aside from that, thanks. What do you guys think about this article? What do you think about forcing somebody into the line? You know, there were two parts in this article that stood out to me. One was that Darren says he decided early on that he wasn't going to let a grumpy past master get the best of him, and he was going to serve the lodge anyway. Now, personally, that's why I also got into line, because I just felt that I owed it to the lodge, after all they had done for me, to serve. So, I served. I went through a line, and I sat in the line for 7 years, going from junior steward all the way up to the master of the lodge. You know, then I went on to serve in other capacities with Grand Lodge. But out of that service, not everybody has that calling, right? Not everybody has that passion. And also, we're pushing people who probably aren't qualified. Just because you're a Freemason doesn't necessarily mean you're qualified to run a lodge either. Something else Darren said in here that I also related to was just how much and how many times a person will come up to you after the meeting and tell you everything that you did wrong. Sure, those kinds of comments help sometimes, but more often than not, after I got those kinds of call-outs, I would make mental notes to fix them. Not necessarily for the benefit of the craft, but for my own benefit, that I wouldn't have to hear that same thing again next month. My question for the Craftsman Plus is, have you ever been forced into the officer line? Have you ever felt like you were being pressured to get into the officer line? I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Next up, let's get into illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison's Masonic Minute.
In 2021, the Grand Lodge of Missouri celebrates its 200th anniversary with events throughout the year marking the milestone occasions that brought it into existence. Some of these events will be held in St. Louis, very close to the spot where our brothers of two centuries ago gathered in a simple, unremarkable room to begin that journey. In 1816, General William Clark of the Lewis and Clark Expedition built what was one of only a few brick houses in St. Louis. Clark used the lower floor for business. Missouri Lodge 12, with its Tennessee charter, met in a room on the second story there from the time Clark completed the house until late 1817. Masons described the house as poorly adapted for Masonic purposes and inconveniently located. They approached Brother Thompson Douglas, who was constructing a two-story building in the center of town, and persuaded him to add an attic which the Masons could use. Were that building standing today, where it stood in 1817, at its spot in the center of St. Louis, it would be directly under the gleaming Gateway to the West Monument, better known as the St. Louis Arch. Upon its completion, the Masons moved into the room measuring 38 feet on each side to conduct their business. There, they also founded Missouri Royal Arch Chapter No. 1 and, in 1821, organized the Grand Lodge of Missouri, chartering what today is St. Louis, Missouri Lodge No. 1. Frederick L. Billet was raised at the age of 22 in that very room. Born in 1801, Billen lived to be 94 years of age in a life that spanned virtually all of the 19th century. He served as Missouri's Grand Secretary for many years and thoroughly chronicled Missouri Masonry during that time. In his memoirs, he talks about one particular meeting in that third-story room, which he attended on Friday, April 29th, 1825. That evening, the young brother, still a relatively new Mason, ascended the creaky wooden stairs, and as he entered the lodge room, he discovered two visitors. In Billen's words, "We were honored by a visit from our nation's distinguished guest, our illustrious brother, General Lafayette, on the occasion of his visit to St. Louis, accompanied by his son, George Washington Lafayette, on which occasion they were both duly elected honorary members of our Grand Lodge. The United States had invited the 68-year-old French aristocrat, who had supported our country and commanded American troops in the Revolution, to tour the country." Billen writes, "This room was used for Masonic purposes until the close of the year 1833, when Missouri Lodge No. 1, under the pressure of circumstances, ceased her labors for a time, and the Grand Lodge was removed to Columbia, Boone County." The so-called pressure of circumstances, he mentions, is a euphemism for the brutal aftermath of the Morgan Affair. For 16 years, that nondescript room provided an auspicious venue for the formation of the Grand Lodge of Missouri and served as its Grand Lodge offices. It also saw the formation of Missouri's first lodge, the first Missouri Royal Arch chapter, was a reception room for the great Lafayette, hosted the ceremony honoring him, and saw countless other Masonic ceremonies and events. All this in an attic that was conceived as an afterthought. That little room is graphic proof that it doesn't matter where brothers meet. But what does matter is how Freemasons meet, act, and part. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
You know, I don't think I ever listened to one of these and come out of it and not say, wow, 200 years of Missouri Masonry, the history of that lodge with such a small space. I've been in some small lodges before, Acacia Lodge in Clifton, Virginia, where Jason Richards, a friend from TMR, is from. My own lodge, which is, you know, not much bigger than my office, maybe three times the size of my home office, and so much greatness to have come through. Number one, I think conspiracy theorists and occultists would really probably appreciate the fact of where that lodge was originally standing, directly beneath the arch. I've often wanted to drive west on vacation and think about going directly under the arch as we travel west and think about that symbolically. Then Steve mentions, of course, Brother Billen, which if you don't have that book, I'm going to put it in the show notes and also a link back to the general area on the website where you'll see all Harrison's books. But the Masonic Memoranda of Frederick Billen is a wonderful book. In particular, yes, there's a lot of granular information. However, what you can glean from that information, what you can pull out of it, if you're good at looking at the data and looking at the notes and the things that he said, you can certainly come away from that text with some insights. Lafayette went there. I mean, just what an amazing building. What an amazing history. And thanks to illustrious Brother Harrison for sharing this with us one more time. If you ever see him out in the wild, or perhaps you are interacting with him online, just tell him thanks for what he does with this stuff, because really, he adds so much to this podcast. We really can't thank him enough. Illustrious Brother Harrison, thank you so much for these segments. Everybody out there, go to our YouTube channel to download or to watch the videos of this. They're in a playlist of Masonic Minutes, so you can hit shuffle, right? Maybe on a lodge night, or pull one up for your education one evening. They're really great segments, and they're all there for you. A bit of other news, the book How to Charter a Lodge, a No-Nonsense Unsanctioned Guide, and The Master's Word, a Short Treatise, will be available in hardcover. That's right. The hardcover books are literally three times the price to produce. We did not increase the price by threefold by any means, but they're available only through Amazon. So you'll have to find the links on wcypodcast.com, and you can click buy on hardcover. It'll take you to the Amazon store where you can pick that up. How to Charter a Lodge, again, a no-nonsense, unsanctioned guide. The benefit of this particular book is it covers a lot of things, including how you can bring guys together to form a new lodge, how to form this new lodge, and then pitfalls and things that you'll want to avoid. And then there's great insights in there by brothers like Bob Davis, the current Grand Master of Oklahoma, as well as many others. And we've got a great foreword in there by Brother M. David Allen, who is an entrepreneurial startup guy, an advisor, expert, and he's also a brother. So please check that out if that interests you. It's in paperback and in hardcover, and on Kindle. All on Amazon. If you'd like a paperback version, so you can get that autographed from me direct, as well as on Amazon. But on Amazon, I can't obviously autograph it. So you buy from where you need to get it from. The other is The Master's Word, a Short Treatise. Now, that is going to be on hardcover very soon. I worked on the formatting of that book quite a bit in the last couple weeks in order for it to be a little bit better in the hardcover edition. So what you can expect there in the hardcover edition is a condensed version. So in the original, we left a lot of space to make sure that the annotations on each page were concise and correct. But with the different sizing of the hardcover book, we needed to make some changes, and those are in the way the book is condensed. So all of the footnotes are still relative to where they are on the pages and things, but the book is in hardcover. So again, those will be available as soon as possible. How to Charter a Lodge is available now. Master's Word in a short while. And to wrap it up this week, I wanted to go ahead and read actually a few things from the same set of transactions from the Illinois Lodge of Research. This will come from Volume 2, Number 4. And this one caught my eye. It's called Ann Landers Explains Freemasonry. That's right, it's a woman who was explaining Freemasonry way back in 1981. via a newspaper. Let's see what happened. Ann Landers explains Freemasonry. Ann Landers lives in Chicago, and her advice column appears in newspapers all over the United States. Here is an item which appeared recently, which will be of interest to Masons. Quote, "Dear Ann Landers, my marriage is over, not because of another woman, but because my husband has chosen to join the Masonic Lodge, knowing that I hate and distrust secret societies. He even had all the gall to suggest that I become a member of the Eastern Star, an organization for the wives of Masons. I cannot live with a man who belongs to a group that makes its members take an oath that they will not reveal to anyone. They are also pledged not to reveal what goes on at their meetings. The final insult is that they use religion to gain respectability. I hope, Ann Landers, that your editors are not members of the Masonic Lodge, because if they are, they will not allow this letter to appear in print. I need to know what you think of a man who would join a secret lodge knowing it would mean the end of his marriage." End quote. Signed, The Final Straw in Texas. Well, let's see what Ann says. Quote, "Your signature revealed more than your letter. I strongly suspect that you have been unhappy with your husband for quite some time, and his desire to join the Masons is a convenient, quote-unquote, final straw. I checked with the Grand Master of a Chicago lodge and learned that when a man applies for membership in the Masonic Order, three members do a thorough investigation. They want to find out about his moral character, his reputation among his friends, and the people he works with. They also want to know if his family is supportive of his membership. Under the circumstances, your husband's application would be rejected. Why do you despise this brotherhood? Freemasonry is the world's oldest and largest fraternal organization. Masons support some of the finest hospitals and retirement homes in the country. They also support some splendid homes for children who have no place else to go. They needn't be the kin of a Mason. They take any child. The Masons have a splendid blood donor program and contribute to many national causes. Most hatred is based on ignorance and fear. Think about this." End quote. Well, what I liked about this particular little note from Ann Landers is the fact that she calls out this woman from the get-go, that, you know, her marriage was probably over before this particular incident. But also, she mentions that, of course, yeah, without significant others say so, the Masons in general are not going to allow you to join. But how quirky and odd was that? For our Craftsman Plus out there, did it take any convincing on your part when you mentioned joining the Freemasons to your significant other? I'd love to hear your answers. I can certainly tell you a little bit about my experience with my family when I decided to petition. Next, I'd really like to read from this same volume a not-so-long piece, but it's by Alphonse Sirza, and it's called International Peace Garden and the Craft. Let's dive in. On June 27, 1981, the Masonic Auditorium, located at the International Peace Garden on the border of North Dakota and Manitoba, Canada, was dedicated. The exterior of the building is in the form of the Masonic emblem, has seats for 2,000 persons, and the money for its construction was collected by the Masons of North Dakota and of Manitoba. The garden is operated by a non-profit corporation. The land was donated by the state of North Dakota, 888 acres, and by the province of Manitoba, 1,451 acres. A total of 2,339 acres located on the border between the United States and Canada. It symbolizes the many years of peace that have existed between the two countries. It is a beautiful and useful garden which has been created as a result of financial and other support by many organizations and many persons from both sides of the border. The formal activities on June 27th started at 1:30 p.m. with the United States Strategic Air Command Concert Band, under the direction of Lieutenant Colonel Lauren Johnson, presenting musical selections representing various parts of the North American continent. The band has 50 young men and women from all over the United States. At 3:30 p.m., the Winnipeg Brass, consisting of five musicians, presented a concert of classic and semi-classic numbers. This was followed by the Steinbach Tremble Teens, a group of 32 girls between 13 and 18 years of age from Steinbach, Manitoba, Canada. They presented a well-rounded program of musical numbers. Between 5:30 and 7 p.m., a Turtle Mountain barbecue with all the trimmings was served at the amphitheater area. During this period, entertainment was supplied on a Western music theme by the El Zagel Plainsmen from Bismarck, North Dakota. The formal dedication ceremonies took place at 7:15 with many prominent persons present, at which Freemasonry was well represented. At 8 p.m., the Duluth Accordionaires, directed by John Kopiski, presented a concert of accordion music. The group consists of 36 young persons aged 13 to 19. The group has traveled all over the United States and many foreign countries as goodwill ambassadors. At 10 p.m., the dedication dance started with music supplied by the Branton Shrine Club, the Turtle Mountain Shrine Club, and the Kartam Temple Dance Band. The auditorium was designed by Rittersbusch Associates, architects and engineers of Bismarck, North Dakota, and was constructed by Monroe Contractors of Rolla, North Dakota. The exterior of the building is of cedar siding, but it is planned that in the future a veneer wall will be added of native Turtle Mountain stone. The interior is primarily made of wood with an exposed steel structure and heavy roof decking. The stage has 3,000 square feet of beautiful hardwood flooring. The garden was dedicated on July 14, 1932, and since that time has had the financial and other support of many persons and many groups. This support has resulted in many useful and beautiful things being built in the garden. Among the many items in the garden are the following. A decorative entrance gate. Located near the entrance is the Belova floral clock, electrically operated. A sunken garden with a cloverleaf pool. A Carolyn bell tower. The Peace Chapel, sponsored by the General Grand Chapter of the Order of Eastern Star of North Dakota. It was dedicated on July 18, 1970. It has been used for church services, weddings, and baptisms. The amphitheater, donated by the Knights of Columbus of North Dakota and of Manitoba. Overlook Picnic Shelter, donated by the Grand Chapter of the Eastern Star of North Dakota. The Picnic Shelter, donated by the Saskatchewan Order of Eastern Star. The Picnic Shelter, donated by the Manitoba Order of the Eastern Star. And there are a number of lakes in the garden. One is named after John Storman, a past Grand Master of North Dakota, who has been a warm supporter of the garden for many years. The lodge, the first building constructed in the garden, is a rustic stone and log structure and is used for various social gatherings. Eric F. Willis Memorial Centennial Pavilion is located on the Canadian part of the garden and overlooks Lake Storman and acts as the service center for the garden. The Arboretum is maintained by the Manitoba Horticulture Association. There are many facilities in the garden for camping and picnicking. Throughout the year, there are many organized activities taking place in the garden, such as athletic meetings and music camp meetings. The Masonic Auditorium was conceived and planned as a bicentennial project in 1976 by the Masons of North Dakota and Manitoba, Canada. This type of building was selected because there was a real need to supply shelter from the elements for music concerts, meetings, and conventions than being held in the open-air auditorium. So the reason I selected this particular reading was not just because it's Alphonse Cerza, who's pretty rad, but because it demonstrates this kind of coming together in international way, where Freemasonry was a form of cement, if you will, in this kind of social adhesion. If you listened carefully, you heard many different groups, including the Knights of Columbus. That's right. They worked with us, and they're part of a joint venture to create something so cool and really, in a way, very civic in nature. So I hope you enjoyed. For our Craftsman Plus out there, the question on this particular piece is, are Freemasons doing enough big stuff like this? And if the answer is no, can we? And if the answer is I don't know, why do you think it is that we can't seem to make the news like we did in the past? Granted, this isn't plastered all over the TV, but certainly if you lived in North Dakota and you opened the newspaper in that year, you would see a mention of this. I do want to mention that today you can still go to the International Peace Garden located there, and it is still very much a huge place to go to visit, a tourist attraction with tours and everything else that you can imagine. I'll put a link back in the show notes, but if you just go to peacegarden.com, it's pretty amazing. As I browsed the site, I may or may not have begun putting together road trip notes for the entire family. Sorry, not sorry, kids. Are we there yet? I'm sure I'll be hearing that soon enough this summer. That's it for this week. I want to wish you all a happy week coming up. Remember to not work so hard. Take a few deep breaths for yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. This is a rough time. We're coming out of the pandemic. Tempers and all kinds of things have been raging. We've calmed down very much, I think, on social media. People aren't arguing as much anymore. This is all good. So I just want to say I hope you all continue to be mindful and healthy and active and stay happy. As always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can reach me at admin@wcypodcast.com. One last time, I want to thank our producers, fellows, and contributors of the WCY Podcast. If you want to learn how you can help produce excellent Masonic education for, that's right, almost 10 years running, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show and see how you can help by either monthly contributing or just a one-time gift. It could be 25 cents. Every little bit goes right back into the program and helps bring us excellent content, pay the bills, and bring the world Masonic education to those interested. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.